Hello, I'm Joshua Landis from WAMC News, speaking today with John Kingston. John, welcome to WAMC.
It's great to be on the air with you. Thank you.
Now, John, you're a U.S. Senate candidate running against Elizabeth Warren in this year's election.
That's correct, yes.
So talk to me. What should listeners know about your campaign? What distinguishes you as the right person to serve Massachusetts in the Senate?
Well, here's the situation. Our country is in a state of division and fracture, I believe, especially in its leadership in Washington. And I really believe that the brand of leadership that Elizabeth Warren is bringing to this is one of division and polarization. And I believe in a strong and prosperous America and believe greatly in its potential. But what I really believe is that we're best as Americans when we're united and when we work together. And so if voters agree with me that we need leadership in Washington, which is not divisive, but it actually works together to do the best we can for the citizens of Massachusetts, then they'll be interested in my candidacy. And I do know that the voters of Massachusetts are better than what we're getting out of the division and fracture we're seeing in Washington. I'd like to remedy that.
So running as a Republican candidate in Massachusetts, I imagine much of the electorate would characterize division in Washington as currently emerging from the Republican-led administration in the White House. Do you feel like you would be a remedy to that as well?
Well, I do. I am somebody that can work with all sorts to get along. I've worked across racial, ethnic, and political divides in my time, and to bring people together to achieve objectives. I've showed the independence of mind and independence of character that Massachusetts voters demand. You know, I did show in 2016 by some of the positions I took with respect to the election cycle then that I can stand up for what the Massachusetts voters need and to be, you know, in favor of good solid policies wherever they come from and stand against things when they're not in line with what the voters of Massachusetts need.
What are some of the best examples you can draw on from your personal and professional life that show you can sort of overcome those divisions you identified before and how you would do that as a senator?
Well, I like to focus on our kickoff event. We had our kickoff event at the Kennedy Institute in Boston. And we had it's a wonderful Senate replica chamber there. So it was a perfect opportunity at a spot where you know, people like Senator Sanders or Senator Warren had been previously. And the very fact that a Republican launched his campaign in the Senate chambers at the Kennedy Institute demonstrates the spirit that we're bringing to this campaign. They can go anywhere, go any place. But just having it there wasn't enough. We had well over 400 in attendance, which is a lot for a first-time candidate. But what was most noteworthy was the audience that we had, which even the Boston Globe noted as to its diversity. I think we had the most politically diverse kickoff audience in history on either side of the aisle. We had, you know, not only Republicans, of course, but also lots and lots and lots of Democrats and Independents, and then the racial and ethnic diversity of the audience was extraordinary as well. We had African Americans, Asian Americans, Latino Americans, Korean and Vietnamese and Chinese as subparts of the Asian populace. Anyway, so it was a remarkable day. It demonstrates this work that I've done my entire life to reach across divides, to bring people together, and that's what this whole campaign is going to be about.
To listeners who are people of color living in Massachusetts, what policy would you undertake specifically to make them feel more enfranchised and more heard by the government that's not already being met by the current administration?
Well, you know, I think it's the key, I think, is to be somebody that is demonstrating the interest to take the principles of freedom and liberty, which, you know, is you know, that goes back to the roots of the Republican Party, freedom, liberty, dignity for all, and say, you know, you've got a candidate in Kingston who's demonstrated his entire life that he'll go anywhere, any place, making deep investments in different communities of color. And, you know, is very solicitous of the fact that everything doesn't work exactly the same in all communities for all people, and is willing to go every place to make sure that they're heard.
So, to go back for one moment, what are some of those investments that you're referring to?
Well, it sounds a little bit unusual to mention in a radio interview, but I'd suggest that folks take a look at my bio video, if they could, on johnkingston.com. But it shows that a guy from a white rural town, small working class town, ends up pledging a black fraternity when he goes to Penn. From there, it's been, generation also marrying into a family of Chinese, daughter of Chinese American immigrants. And then, you know, so I've worked, you know, from that point forward in communities, Chinese community, African American community in Boston, African American community, most notably, with the pillars of the Boston African American community, since I've been here in the greater Boston area, you know, to invest in the local churches and the local, programming to take care of the needs of the communities. And I don't want to go into a lot of detail on it and bore your listeners, but I've helped raise hundreds of thousands of dollars or invested hundreds of thousands of dollars in this side of $1 million just to try to be standing alongside my partners in those communities.
Do you feel like you would be an independent voice in immigration to the Republican Party, which is currently engaged in a very contentious debate over immigration in the U.S. Senate?
Well, you know, it's immigration's a fascinating issue right now, because this is exactly what's breaking down in our leadership right now in Washington. Because if you talk to people, as I have, in the black community in the city, or in white rural communities, or any place in between, and you'll find a remarkable measure of agreement. No, there's no one that wants bad guys from abroad to come here. So you find 75 to 80% of the American populace, which the data will show you, say, you know, enhance border security to ensure we know who comes here. So almost everybody's in agreement on that, and yet it becomes very challenging to do something about that. Same thing is true on the subject of sanctuary cities. No one wants to harbor, bad guys from abroad in their communities if they're illegal aliens, no matter what community you're from. So there's a remarkable degree of consensus on these things, as there is with the idea that, you know, if they're DACA children, then we got to figure out some way to make sure that there's a legal status for them here. Again, something which polls in the 75% or 80% numbers. You know, each one of those things is agreed to by broad numbers of the population, no matter what, color, class, where you come from. And yet we can't get anything done in Washington on that. So it's a perfect example of where I'd like to, bring my approach of sensible, for everybody leadership to the Senate.
Would those opinions put you in line with the goals of the Trump administration to install a wall on our southern border with Mexico? And would you say that you support the increasingly lax policies that ICE has to distinguish who's a bad guy and who's not when dealing with immigration in our country?
I think the way I describe it is, as I said a moment ago, the American people, by and large, and I've seen all the data on this, and I've had a million conversations with people from all communities, would, all other things being equal, prefer to know who's coming into this country, have greater measures of border security to figure out that we're applying the order of the rule of law to who comes into our wonderful country. And that's not a Democrat issue or a Republican issue. That's not a white issue or a black issue. It's an American issue. Almost everybody agrees with that, the idea that, you know, we should know who comes in. And the same thing, you know, is true with the idea that, you know, people that are here that are acting, you know, are illegally here and are have done some criminal offense here, you know, should somehow be sent back home. I just think in the last couple of weeks of the terrible case of the, you know, the Indianapolis Colts linebacker, 26 years old, just 2 weeks ago, was hit on the side of the road, you know, by an illegal alien who had been deported twice. And then was hit him in a drunk driving accident, and he lost his life, and that's just not something which any Americans on the side of, you know, it's just to say we should figure out ways that we're better on those subjects.
But to return to my original question, as a Republican candidate, would you back the policies of the Trump White House that very specifically call for a border wall with Mexico?
I just answer the question the same way. Greater border security is something which, you know, Americans of all sorts agree on. And if in some places that means there's a wall, I'm sure people of good faith can agree on that. But better border security is the short of it.
Yes, but like on the specific, as the Congress very specifically deliberates over this issue and budgets are exchanged between the White House and the Congress, that issue has come up very specifically. And I'm interested if, you know, asked directly, would you support a border wall with Mexico as part of an ongoing budget for America?
I'll just answer the same question the same way and say, to the extent that it's achieving the objective of greater border security, you know, to some degree, a wall would be helpful in some situations, and I think that's where the American people stand on the subject as well. People in Massachusetts, you know, would like better border security, and if that in some cases requires a wall, then that doesn't seem unreasonable.
So, in broader strokes, yes.
I think it's fair to say, you know, I'd answer the question that I think the American people, the people in Massachusetts, are very clear on the fact that they would prefer greater border security, and in some cases, if that is a, you know, it doesn't matter whether it's a wall, it's a moat, it's a river, it's a, you know, it just, you know, it's greater technology. So there's any number of good solutions to that question. And I think, you know, a wall would be one of many possible solutions to get achieving the objective, to applying the order of the rule of law to who gets to come into our nation.
Very well. So moving on to a very pertinent question from today's headlines, what's your stance on gun control as it applies to not just the Commonwealth, but the nation at large?
Well, I think you start with the fact that as an initial matter, you know, we all believe in the premises of this great country in the ground in the Constitution, and you know, for starters, I obviously believe in the Second Amendment. I also believe that you know, the laws are failing us. You know, the mental health system is failing us, and so there are obviously ways that we have to figure out how to do better. And you know, that this time and again we find, you know, just the very very, you know, the very protocols that are meant to be, you know, protecting us, being violated and not being observed, and we tragically see these cases. So we all know that something needs to be done to improve on what's happening.
So I want to move on to talking about your campaign against Senator Warren. The Democratic Party in Massachusetts is a huge entity that to some seems very monolithic. What are your political and fundraising strategies to overcome that challenge?
Well, I think, you know, it's interesting the way that it's all developed here in Massachusetts. First of all, just to say, the Republican Party's only got 10% of the state right now, but Democrats only have 30% of the state, you know, within its voting rolls. So that leaves 60% that are independents, and that is obviously the big driving force now with the Massachusetts populace. And I think that I have to say that if I were running against what I call a normal Democrat within the sort of the mainstream of what the Democratic Party has tended to believe over time, it would be a tough haul, you know, because Massachusetts voters tend to reward I'll just call it regular normal Democrats, but ones that are seemingly acting on behalf of the populace, you know, go back to the old lions of the left, but not the extreme left, you know, Ted Kennedy or Tip O'Neill as examples, right? They were tough to beat because they served the people of Massachusetts. They, you know, everybody knew they were working for the people of Massachusetts. They compromised in the Senate and the House in order to get along, famously Kennedy with Orrin Hatch and famously Tip O'Neill with President Reagan. Elizabeth Warren is not any of that. She's not a D for Democrat these days. She's an E for extremist, it seems to me. And she's taking positions that are outside the mainstream, and allows for a lot of room, you know, to say, okay, voters in Massachusetts, do you want somebody that seems to be voting against everything, and uses hostile rhetoric, divisive rhetoric at many turns? Or do you want somebody who wants to say aspirationally, hey, this is who we are as Americans. These are the values which we all share together. Let's work together. Let's get the best done we can for the people of Massachusetts. Against a regular mainstream Democrat, this might be a tough election cycle, but we'll both be distinguished, by the choices we've made over time. And Elizabeth Warren gives me a lot of room to say, do you like a strategy like, you know, Governor Baker's? Do you like an approach like Governor Baker's with his 70% approval rating, one that works with everybody to get along, or do you want a style that's sort of standing against everything? And I think there's plenty of room to run a winning strategy there.
Do you feel like any of the controversy surrounding President Trump and his use of social media, which has proven to be divisive in a somewhat continuous basis since his election, does that threaten the credibility of a Republican candidate running in a state like Massachusetts?
Well, I think that when people look at the candidacy, my candidacy, they look at who I am, I'll direct your listeners to my website, johnkingston.com. We've got my bio video, which I mentioned a moment ago, telling the story of an unusual, different kind of candidate, different kind of leader, telling a story of, you know, my Ellen story, a heroic story of a domestic abuse survivor that was able to work with and get to safety. And we'll be telling a lot more stories along those lines, but this is about uniting America. This, my entire campaign is going to be about things that are not Republican nor Democrat, but fully American. For example, I'm coming out with the Uniting America series, which will launch with a first one on taking care of veterans and their needs, veterans and veterans' families and their needs, second one on racial justice, third one on opioid crisis, et cetera. These are not Republican issues. These are not Democratic issues. These are American issues. And so when people look at who John Kingston is and compare that to that style of can-do, bring people together to achieve our highest objectives as Americans versus Elizabeth Warren, I think I'll fare quite well.
Yeah, I suppose I'm touching on the idea that there's an idea of building consensus and unity here in Massachusetts, and then there's this national political spectrum, which has maybe never been more at odds with itself and never more divided. So while some of those ideas of unity within Massachusetts are very appealing, the idea of joining the Congress at a time where it has rarely seemed quite so far apart seems like a taller order than just uniting Massachusetts. So the decisions you would make in that capacity would impact a far greater scale than just the Commonwealth.
And I think it's a great, great observation you're making, and I 100% agree with you. And what I'm suggesting is that my candidacy will represent something unique and different in that regard, and will stand in contrast to the national Republican Party brand that voters will be thinking about more generally. And, you know, as Charlie Baker has managed to do, stand independent of that. And I believe I can do that as well.
So what are some specific issues that you feel like you would stand independent from the party on?
Well, I'm just going to start say that, you know, my basic approach to everything is the classic outsider campaign. I believe Washington is broken. You've heard me say that on the issue of division. And then I'll say, I want to stand against divisive figures, and I'm going to do that. But I also will say that I want to fundamentally reform the way Washington is carrying on its business. I've already signed a term limits pledge, and I will do everything in my power to cycle through leadership in Washington so that the people are not there forever, seeming to be at the beck and call of special interests, unions, corporations, et cetera, et cetera. But even further than that, I'm going to dig in and put my shoulder into the idea that, you know, senators or representatives shouldn't get paid if they don't do their job. I mean, for example, the budgets weren't passed for many years, and you know, which is just shameful. People were acting like that was, you know, business as usual. And any of us who didn't do their jobs and their day jobs wouldn't get paid. Washington should work that way, too. Finally, I'll say in my reform approach that, I also plan to be creating a independent caucus of problem solvers that are on both sides of the aisle. One exists in the House currently, you know, people from the Democratic Party, people from the Republican Party that are willing to put aside, party allegiances just in the to the objective of, creating common sense outcomes for the American people.
You mentioned earlier standing against divisive figures in national politics. I'm sure that applies to people across party lines. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely.
So you've identified Elizabeth Warren as someone who you feel like is dividing America right now, and specifically the Commonwealth. Who are some figures in the Republican Party that you feel like have expressed divisive opinions on a national scale?
Well, I think had us down for 10 minutes or 15 minutes, and I think we're working on 25 now. So I'll make this my last comment, and then I'll get off. Referenced this earlier. Part of the independence of mind, the independence of character that I've demonstrated was in the 2016 election cycle, which if your listeners are willing to look into my background, they'll see that I looked for an independent candidate to stand, either against Secretary Clinton or Donald Trump at that time, thinking that there was a better way for America. I called it Better for America. So that's, it's illustrative of, you know, a way in which I've stood against, what I didn't think were in the best interest of the country at different points, and that's what I'm going to do when I'm in Washington. I'm going to stand for what's in the best interest of the country by standing against, people or situations that are divisive. That's the game plan. I'm all in on that. I'm leaning into it. I think that will resonate with the people of Massachusetts that are tired of, somebody who just keeps on being, hostile devices. I'll give you one illustration as a wrap up here. I was with at an event on Martin Luther King Day with Senator Warren and a variety of other leaders, and comments from folks in the Democratic Party. Touched with some sadness on the day that we're in, on this Martin Luther King Day, but struck a completely reasonable note of who we are as Americans, aspirationally what they would like to see out of our leadership. So Democrat after Democrat spoke in that tone, and then Elizabeth Warren took the microphone, and the anger and the hostility and the name-calling, describing the president in really, really unseemly terms on that day in that audience struck a jarring note against you know, even what fellow Democrats would do about saying, look, I wish it was different. I would like something to be different. But speaking with honor and regard, you know, the day of national aspiration, you know, marking Martin Luther King's birthday. Anyway, so I thought it was noteworthy and you know, as to like this, that's not what people in Massachusetts want. They don't want that. They want something different. They could have principal disagreements with the president. They can have principal disagreements with people on either side, but they don't want somebody that's just trying to throw bombs. So I plan to be that person.
Well, John, thanks so much for speaking to us today.
It's really a pleasure. Thank you so much for the time. I'm very grateful for you giving me the time with you, and have a good day.
You as well, sir. Thank you so much.
Thanks very much. Bye now.